Parshas Va'era is the middle of the Parshios and Shemot, Va'era, Bo, B'Shalach, which deal with the story of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim in Egypt. And Parshas Va'era begins the Makos. It has 7 of the 10 plagues that Hashem put on the Mitzrayim. When we look at this Parsha, as well as all these Parshios, and we see how much time that the Torah spends recording the experiences of the Jews in Egypt, and how so many mitzvos are zecher l'tziyat Mitzrayim, recalling the exodus from Egypt, it begs the question, why is there such an emphasis on this experience of the Jews in Egypt, that the Torah spends so much time on it, that we have so many mitzvos, the mitzvah every day to remember it, we have Pesach, we have Kiddush and Shabbos, over and over again, we were confronted with this story of Egypt. Why does it take up so much of our attention? And obviously there are many answers to respond to this question, but I'd like to try to take a different mahalach, a different approach today that I think is very, very powerful. And that will be the existential Exodus experience that is meaningful for each and every one of us, each and every moment of our lives. To be able to introduce this concept, there's a gevaldic piece in Einei Yisrael Rav Belsky, where he points out something from the Haggadah that we're all familiar with, but the way he presents it is a tremendously powerful insight for which to guide and direct us in our study. And that is in source number 2. He says that we know in the Haggadah, Chazal compared the Makos that took place in Mitzrayim and then those that took place at the splitting of the sea. The Haggadah states, Kamalaku, with how many Makos were the Mitzrayim smitten at the sea? So the 10 plagues of Mitzrayim were delivered by an etzpa, a finger. As the Chartumim, the magician, said, this is the finger of God. And at the sea it's written, and Yisrael saw the great hand. So if one finger represents 10 Makos, then 5 fingers of a hand must represent 50. The Mitzrayim were therefore smitten with 50 plagues at the sea. And that is then developed more in the Haggadah. But listen to the gevaldic idea here. The comparison goes deeper. If a person wishes to strike or punish, he will use his hand. That is where his strength lies. However, if he wishes to teach or to demonstrate, a person will use his finger to point out the truth. This is the distinction between the plagues in Egypt and those at the sea. The Makos in Mitzrayim were the finger of God. They were meant to teach the Mitzrayim as well as the Jews. While at Kriyas Yamsuf, Hashem smote the Egyptians with his great hand in order to destroy them. My friends, this is the model that I'd like us to approach this parsha. That when we're dealing with the Makos, and the obvious question, as Einei Yisrael notes in source number 1, we've discussed at length in the past, what was the point of the Makos? The Mitzrayim didn't get the lesson, it took them 10 Makos. So was it for them? Was it for the Jews? Were the Jews supposed to understand something? Are we today supposed to understand something? And the answer is yes to all of the above. Because the Makos were not meant as a punishment as much as an instruction. And the fact that it was etzpa, the finger of God, and the finger is the medium to teach. The mindset we need to understand in looking at the Makos and looking at the whole Egyptian experience in Egypt is that of a teaching experience. What were we supposed to learn? What was the lesson that was supposed to be given over? So the classic approach, which I'd like to mention, which is beautifully summarized in the Sefer Abidah Bracha of Rafael Baruch Saretskin, based on earlier Rishonim and Mefarshim, is that the Makos are divided up, as we know by Rabbi Yehuda, into 3 groups, Tzach, Adash, Ba'achav. And here the Bina Vabracha notes very, very clearly. He says in the first paragraph in 3, he says, Ulam Yisurim Bidei Shamayim. Anytime we get challenges, difficulties from the hand of God. Ba'olam hazeh, in this world, einam begeder onesh. They are not coming as a punishment. Rak kidei lavi et adam lidei tshuva, but rather they are here in order for us to come closer to Hashem. They're here for an order for us to become better people. Again, this is that mindset of the etzpa, the finger, and not the yad, that the makos are here to teach. And they're divided, as we mentioned, in Ditzach, Adash, Ve'achav, in the three groupings. And if you look at the Chumash, the Klei Yoker points this out very clearly, that before each of the beginning of each of the series of makos, in Dam, in Arov, and in Barad, the Pasuk Beferish states what is the philosophical idea that Hashem wants to impart to the Mitzrayim as well as to the Jews. What is the lesson he's meant to teach? And they're best encapsulated, says the Bina Vabrocha, in the asterisks in four. Hinei ikar hekerut ben Yisrael michlal bepasuk shel kabbalat olmachut shemayim. The three main lessons are encompassed in the very famous pasuk of Shema Yisrael, which is the pasuk of kabbalat olmachut shemayim, accepting upon ourselves the yoke of heaven. The first is in Shema Yisrael, listen, understand Israel. One, Hashem, Metzius Hashem, that Hashem exists, that He's Maniga Olam, that He is the ruler of the world. The second is Elokeinu, Shelekla Yisrael Yeshan Hagav Hashkocha Prati Miyuchedet. He's Elokeinu, He's our God. There's a special Hashkocha, there's a special divine providence. And thirdly, Hashem Echad, the Achdus Habore, the unity of God, that they're not different forces, a good force and an evil force, but it's one force, Hashem Echad. And you see this, so for example, by the Arov, the fact that the wild animals didn't travel into Israel, that is a clear sign of Hashkocha Pratit, of divine providence. In Barad, you clearly see that water and fire, which normally do not complement each other, are able to get along, that there is one koach, there's one uniting factor in this world. And that is the lesson that we need to learn. And hence, continues Avinu Vabrocha in source number 6 and says, Kol amarbe l'safir b'tziat Mitzrayim, as Agada said, one who continuously speaks about the story of Egypt, Harev Zemeshubach, is praiseworthy. Why? Because it's teaching us the idea of Kabbalah Satora, of Ani Hashem Elokecha, of the Anochi, of the existence of Hashem, the Akarus. This is our acquaintance, our acknowledging the basic fundamentals of our faith. And as Ani Yisrael points out in source number 7, the Chumash itself testifies to the intent of the Makos. The purpose of the Makos was to forcibly impress into the minds of the Egyptians, as well as ours, the Yadatem ki ani Hashem. You shall know that I am Hashem. This is the point of the Makos. It's interesting, if we understand that this is a teaching methodology, that we understand so clearly by the etzba, the finger, that this is not coming as punishment, but is coming as a teaching mechanism to recognize the basic principles of faith, the acknowledgement that there is a God, that there's a God involved in our world, that the God is a unified God. It's interesting that the medium to which this message was given across has within it a certain duality which really reflects this challenge that we have and that they had in life, in our difficulty in accepting these realities. And what I'm referring to is the matah, the staff of Moshe Rabbeinu. In source number 8, Rabbi Tatzin, Living Inspired, he notes that we note a pervasive duality in the matah. It is engraved with Hashem's name, the name of all-encompassing kindness, but also with the plagues, manifestation of Hashem's strict punitive justice. It is used to perform miracles of salvation and sustenance for the Jewish people, but acts as a rod of retribution for the Egyptian. It punishes evil, but is capable of becoming an embodiment of evil. And this is a fascinating aspect, that the challenge in Egypt is to recognize God. It's not to be blinded by the causality of this world. The matah, the medium of punishment, served as well as a certain duality in this world in terms of do we see the hand of God or do we not? And he notes in the asterisk in 8, there's an idea that evil is not created in the world. However, it's certainly made possible. Changing that possibility into reality is our choice. If we do not pervert the world, it remains good. If we deflect it from its natural state, we bring evil into being. There's a mystical source which indicates that the higher worlds are created straight, and that this finite physical world represents a bending of that straightness. Once a bend has occurred, there's a danger. When all is straight, no error can be made. When a bend manifests, error has not become inevitable, but has become decidedly possible. And the mushal he gives in 9 is if a person walking down a straight path will be able to easily go back to the point of origin because they can see it. But once you turn, once there's a bend in the road, you no longer see where you've come from. And that's our challenge in our world, where we don't connect every single event that happens. We don't see the hand and the spirituality of God in every single occurrence. There's been a bend in the road. We no longer see clearly that there's a cause and effect, that there's a God who's in charge of everything. But we inhabitants, 9b, of the finite see only the finite as a point of origin. To see the spiritual, one must be able to see around corners. One has to be able to see into the dimension which is essentially invisible from here. And that's the whole idea of remembering, of going back to that point of origin. And it's interesting because the name of the Jewish people, Yisrael, is that concept is embodied in the name, Yashar El, the straight one of Hashem. Our job is to be able to create a straight line in every event, in every occurrence, in everything that is found in our world, in every object, in everything that we own, as we've spoken about, and see it as a purpose to be able to serve God. The Mata stands at the junction between heaven and earth. The Mata is exactly that. It's a branch that has come off of a tree. It is the point of the bend. The Mata represents, if it's held in the correct hands, it connects us back to the Eitz Chaim Ilam HaChazikim Ba. It connects us back to the tree. But if it's in the wrong hands, if you let it loose, then it can become the serpent itself. It can become the embodiment of evil and completely distorted from the tree itself. And this, my friends, is the whole experience in source number 13 of the beginning of our parsha, almost the introduction before the Makos, where Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron come before Paro, and Aaron takes his staff and throws it to the ground, and it becomes a serpent. And Paro laughs, and the Medrash says, my wife can do this, school children can do this. You call this, something impressive. What's going on here? What's this dialogue about? It's about this very issue where Paro looks at that Mata, which embodies truth, and sees how it can be perverted into the greatest of evils. And he says, that's our job in Egypt. That's what we do in Mitzrayim, the place of sorcery, the place of distortion. This is the place, it's Malay Zima, that's full of disgusting things, because it is the antithesis of Kedusha, the antithesis of holiness. So what does Aaron do when all the Chartumim, when all the sorcerers take their staff and throws them into the ground, and they also become serpents? So the asterisk in 12, and Aaron's staff swallows up all the others. Good and holiness will engulf evil eventually. And of course, it swallows them after revealing itself as a Mata, not a serpent. That is the point. It is a reality of correct perception, of remaining true to the source of the world that will conquer the vicious falsehood of evil. The business of evil is to dash the Mata to earth and cause it to manifest as a snake. And our business is to hold it aloft and reveal it as this Mata. It's not easy. Once the road is forked, one may generally be lost. Fighting home may take all we have, but that moment of transformation of the self, That's point, a snapping out of terrifying ordeal into transcendent clarity of victory is what life is all about, and that's why we are here. The whole beginning story of Source 12 notes is to tell us what is the battlefield in Egypt, to be able to distinguish truth from falsehood, to be able to take that matzah, that staff, and see how it's connected to the tree, and be able not to be consumed in the world of the snakes, the world of the original creation story, the world of evil par excellence. So my friends, it sounds pretty simple. Makos are here to teach, they're here to demonstrate the truth of God, and the matzah is that representation of that struggle. Are we able to connect ourselves with the staff of truth, or is our staff turned into a snake and we live a life of illusions and a life of doubts? My friends, I'd like to take this idea much, much more deeply and really bring it into our own homes and our own lives. And I'd like to share an insight from the Sefer Chikrei Lev of Aryeh Lev Hyman, who we mentioned last week, a Rav in Beit Vegan, who allows us to be able to see this story of Yetziat Mitzrayim and the Jews in Egypt in a way that is so personal, and this that we just spoke about, to bring it from the esoteric into the practical. He asks in Source 13, he says, when you look at the story from a perspective of questioning and not assuming we know the story because we learned it as children and hear it year after year, one is immediately struck by the personality of Paro and the whole interchange between him and Moshe Rabbeinu. After a plague happens, Paro calls Moshe Rabbeinu and says, please, daven to Hashem to get rid of this plague. So Paro seems to be like this little wimpy weakling. The plague is gone, and then Moshe says, okay, let us leave. And Paro says, no, you can go, but your children can't go. You can go, but your cattle can't go. Suddenly, he seems to be this tough Paro making decisions. Who's the weak one here, and who's the strong one here? Why couldn't it be that Kadosh Baruch Hu says, forget the Makos, you're just leaving, and Paro's going to put up a struggle, goodbye. They're just going to be blown out of the water, literally. What's going on here? It seems like this whole shenanigan. What's going on with all these Makos? And what do we need to be thinking about when we're reading it in the Chumash? So he says in Source 14, HaTorah Nikreit Mishal HaKadmoni, the Torah is called the parable of the first one, the earlier one. And Rashi explains, as the Torah is a mashal, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Shukadmano Shel Olam, preceded the world. All the words of Kol Divrei HaTorah, Kol Ala Mitzvos, the Sipurei HaTorah, the Mitzvos as well as the stories, Mishalim Heim, they can really be understood as parables, L'chol HaKorei L'Adam Bo Olamol, to all that transpires in our world. V'tafkidam L'Lamdo Ketzara Lav L'Nhog B'Chayav, and they're here to teach us how we need to act in our life. Ma'sheirich HaTorah Ma'od B'nyan HaMakol B'Nagutol Shel Paro, and the reason the Torah spent so much time on the Makot and Paro's behavior, who kidei shadami bonem by a vimin hamashal shanim shali no elahu atzmo, in order to be able to look at the story as a mashal and see the nimshal, the explanation, as a reference to ourselves. What's the mashal? So he says in 15, Paro hu mashal v'dugma leitzahara shabata. When we're talking about Paro, and we describe Paro as shole misofo lamba tzafo, from ruling from one end of the world to the other, that's about ruling over us, over the person. We are called an olam katan, we are the karul shel olam. When we're talking about Paro, yes, there was a Paro in Egypt, and yes, there's a Paro in each and every one of us. There's a Pharaoh, and that's our Yetzahara. That's the ruler that rules over us, that has dominion over us. And we are all slaves to him, and we are all enslaved to his desires, and what he tells us, we do. And it's interesting that the way Paro was able to rule over us is very similar to the way the Yetzer Hara works, right? At the beginning, Paro said, we'll all work together, and he went out. And then he says, okay, I'm out of the picture. The Egyptians are out of the picture, and only you guys, are Jews, are working. And explains Rabbi Robert, and through the prism of Torah, the nature of a snake is to attack its victims by biting him in the heel. The bite itself is tiny and seems harmless, but appearances are often deceptive. With this small incision, the snake has injected a fatal poison that will soon deaden the entire body. And he continues and explains, the Rambam writes that Paro personified the essence of the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, which works in the same manner. It too begins with insidious incursions in relatively minor areas of Yiddishkeit, with insidious, but with which will ultimately spread further and wreak havoc. In this vein, the Klei Yecher explains the verse in Bereishit, when the Almighty addressed the serpent and said, "Hu Yishuv Charog, Shayid will be able to crush the Yetzer Hara, characterized by the snake when it comes to the Rosh, the major sins of murder, immorality, idolatry. However, Batat Teshufenu Akev, in the field of the Akev, those so-called petty offenses, which we tread underfoot, there the Satan will make inroads, and once he has inserted his poison, it will become lethal. If, however, we are aware in advance in 19 of this ploy practiced by the Satan, our task is that much easier." Basically, we must realize that there's nothing trifling in Yiddishkeit. All davening can be spoiled by coming a little late at the start. A slight indiscretion in moral integrity can have devastating consequences. A casual bit of Lashon Hara can ruin lives. Recognize that power of that snake. If you're not holding it as a mata, if you aren't holding strong to the reality of truth, when that snake comes and bites and it seems so innocuous, the power of the Paro, the power of the Yetzer Hara, is that it starts with something very small, and before you know it, a lethal poison has come into our entire bodies. And my friends, I think that this offers us a fantastic insight in looking at the entire parashios we're dealing with here. So that when we, as the reader, get frustrated and we say, Paro, how foolish can you be? You see the makos in front of you. Just let the people go. Stop. Let's turn inward. Let's look at our own lives. Are we so easy to be able to rid ourselves of our Paro? Does our Paro, do we have the ability to knock off our Yetzer Hara and just walk right out into freedom? It's not so simple. And that's why we need to look at Paro and Paro's responses as a model of what our Yetzer Hara, of what our evil inclination says to us, how it holds a grip on us that makes it not so easy for us to extricate ourselves, us being the Yetzer Hara, us being the Jews in prison, and us eventually being the Levi Moshe Rabbeinu, who's going to try to get ourselves out. We play many roles in this mashal, in this parable. I'd like to take a look as an example of two times where Paro admits that he was wrong and see a little bit more in detail how his admittance is so narrow and so limiting. The first, Vayishlach Paro sends, and he says, Chatati apam, I've sinned this time. Explains the Bina Vabrocha. He says, what is the word that Paro adds here? He doesn't say Chatati. This is after a number of makos. He says, Chatati hapam, this time around. He's not moda. He doesn't see that this has been a sharsherit arukah mekusherit biyachad lansho avuri naguto. He doesn't see this as a number of makos coming together to try to teach him a lesson. He's looking at it in its absolute, very narrow form. Rakol dasha chatati apam. Now I see the hand of Hashem. U'mishum hachi lo yar roshem chazak alav kol kach. And that's why the impression wasn't so strong. Kol adam eino shalem b'chol ha-mahuto u'beprapim ha-savu b'hanagato. None of us are perfect. And when we have a calling from above, when something happens, which is clearly a wake-up call, it could be your car breaks down, whatever it is, a wake-up call to become better. Our challenge is, do we just look at the broken car and we see this in the narrow sense? Or do we say, you know, today was the car and yesterday it was and the day before it was. Gee, I think there's a real message being given over here. Let me see how I can change. Let me see how I can be transformed. And because he says human nature is not to do that, but human nature is to be like this paro. Ulam chatati apam, in this case, I've sinned. In that situation, when we're only looking at the here and now and not seeing a larger picture, it lacks a chisaron pnimi she'oto tzarich l'takein v'lo t'aprat ha'miyuchad. And that's why our hisorus, our awakening, is so limited, because I'm just focused on my car, but I don't see it as part of the larger whole. Paro's limitation is our limitation. We're reading these parashios, we're looking in the mirror. We sound like Paro. Why did this happen to me? What am I supposed to learn from this, which is good? Chatati apam. But we have to go beyond Paro and see what has led up to this. Look into it much more deeply to be able to see a pattern and to be able to see a lesson that's trying to be imparted. I'd like to take a look at another example when Paro admits his limitation. And I'd like to do a very beautiful piece of Shilei Pinchas, or Pinchas Friedman. This is Belzer Torah, so we're now going to be shifting into, for a number of moments, Hasidic thought. And I think, aside from the beauty in the presentation itself, I think it affords us an opportunity to see the depth of the Ayin Panim LaTorah, of the Pardes, the Pshat, Remez, Drash, and Sod, and things that we encounter all the time, to be able to appreciate when we scratch the surface and see it from a different angle. After Makav Barod, if I'm not mistaken, Paro says, Hashem HaTzadik, this is in 22, V'ani v'ami harishayim. Hashem, he is the tzaddik, he is the righteous one, and I and my people are wicked. Wow, that sounds amazing. And that sounds like a real confession. So it's brought down Hasidic thought, and we've spoken about this before, so it's we have some background in this, that if we take a look at the first letters in this sentence, Hashem begins with a yud, hatzaddik, then that's the letter he. Skipping Vani for a second, Ve'ami is a Vav, and Harishoyim is a Hey. That's the full name of Hashem, the Yudke Vavke. Hashem HaTzadik, Ve'ami Harishoyim. What does Paro do? He inserts right in the middle of the Yudke Vavke, right in the middle of the full name of Hashem, one word, Ve'ani, and I. That I is breaking the Yudke Vavke, the full name of Hashem, and creating havoc in our world. It's taking the knowledge, the idea, the knowledge of Hashem, and limiting it by putting the ani, the ego, the etzahara, the ani is para, the etzahara in our understanding, right in the middle. And he does it, says the Shilei Pinchas, in the categories I'd like to offer, is the three that the Maharal, the classifications, the three, the Maharal explains that every aspect is ben adam la'atzmo, between man and himself, ben adam l'chaveiro, between man and fellow man, and ben adam l'makom, between man and God. And we'll see those three classifications, where Paro is putting this division in the Yud Kei Vav Kei. The first is a very interesting idea that's brought down in 25 based on the Arizal. We know that a man and a woman, when they get married, each one brings a letter of God's name. Ish is man, Isha is woman, Aleph and Shin are the same letters. What's unique about a man is the letter Yud. What's unique about a woman is the letter He. He's the letter of Yud, she's the letter He, which is the beginning of Yud Kei Vav Kei, the beginning of Hashem's name. According to Beis Hillel, people should try to have, if they can, a boy and a girl. The boy represents the letter Vav, and the girl, once again, represents the letter Hey. When you have a family of a father, mother, and sons and daughters, what you're looking at is the family of the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. What does Paro say? He says, who in 23 do you want to send? He says, Eshlach etchem v'tapchem re'u ki ra'a neged p'nechem. Lo kein l'chuna gvarim. You know what? Just let the gvarim, the men go. We'll leave the kids back here. What was Paro trying to do? Paro, the Yetzer Hara, tries very hard to split the Yud-Kei, the father, mother, from the Vav-Kei, from the children. And Moshe Rabbeinu's response in 24 is, B'nareinu b'tzkeinenu neileh. We're going to go with our children. And explains to Shri Pinchas in 23, Ki achan me yisodas ha'yikum shakla Yisrael in the asterisks, one of the foundations of Jewish Torah, he chinuch haboni v'abonos, is educating the sons and the daughter, that they should continue in the ways of the Torah, and the Mesorah from generation to generation. Lachem mishtadlim ha'yitzahara, that's why the Yitzahara and the Rishayim try to create a barrier between the parents and their children, that the children should not move further following their parents' lead. And he says, this is one of the challenges of the Paro of the Yetzer Hara. My friends, we definitely have this challenge in our generation. Our generation, the Ikvasa de Mashiach, the generation of right before the coming of Mashiach, we know is one of the darkest generations, just like it's particularly dark right before the sun rises. And as the Sfarim point out, the challenges, the lures that we have not been matched in any other generation. What one can see on the internet, when one can see children 10 years old at the flip of a button is pusha scary. And we're dealing with, like in droves, unfortunately, children off the derech, we're dealing with this as a societal challenge. This is Paro's goal. The Yetzer Hara, the Satan, the evil forces around us. Parents, you want to be Shomrei Torah Mitzvot, fine. But I'm not going to have you be successful in transmitting this to the next generation. The Va'ani, the Paro, is going to split the Yud-Kei and the Vav-Kei. And my friends, I'll tell you, it's not, you know, I don't think there's one magic formula of why children go off the derech and how to bring children back on the derech. I recently experienced something that I found personally very, very painful. And I'm going to be very vague here, which I have to be, for the confidentiality of all involved. I know a young lady whose parents are and family are from Klai Kodesh, and this young lady went to seminary, and it wasn't. She loves her parents. She finds them those amazing people. Yiddishkeit has never spoken to her, and she's living off on a college campus somewhere in America. And I happened to speak to her Erev Chanukah, the Tuesday night before Chanukah. And I'll call her Sarah, all my students, right, generic names like Sarah. I said, Sarah, are you ready tomorrow night to light Chanukah candles? She said to me, when's Chanukah? I said, tomorrow night. She said, oh, really? I thought it was at the end of December. This is a girl who comes from a family of Kedusha, who comes from a family of so connected, so involved in Klal Yisrael. This is a girl who herself spent a year learning in seminary. And didn't even know when Chanukah was, which even secular Jews know what Chanukah is. And she said to me, Mrs. Smiles, do you know that the life on a secular campus is the lures are so all pervasive that it's hard not to get sucked up into this world. And unfortunately, as a result, you don't even know when Chanukah is. It broke my heart. I personally took on a kapitul tehillim to say Bli Neder every day for the Yeshua of this girl. It's mind-boggling. But how many young ladies and young men are there? That's the Va'ani. That's the division, the Paro, that the Yetzer Hara, in this case, more the external Yetzer Hara than the internal one, tries to impose on us. The second is a concept we've spoken about before in 27, that the Shem Havaya, the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, the name of Hashem, the name of Rachamim, is really manifested in the Pasuk, Yismuchu HaShamayim V'Tagel HaAretz. Let the heavens rejoice and let the land rejoice as well. the heavens rejoicing and the earth rejoicing is both understanding a connection to Hashem, feeling Hashem's presence. What does Paro do? What does the Yetzirah within us do? It makes a distinction. Yismachu Hashemayim, yes, let the heavens rejoice. Hashem Atzadik, yes, God is in heaven. Yes, when you're in shul and you're davening and you're saying brachos and you're being spiritual, yes, feel God. But Vani, Vani Arishayim, but when you're down here, when you're with the Ami, Ani, when you're with the ego, then we and my nation are the Rishayim, are the wicked ones, and our job is to divide the Yismachu Hashemayim and the Tagel Haaretz, that you don't feel Hashem down here. And this really, my friends, is the idea of Ben Adam L'Makom, between man and God, where you're not going to feel when you do mitzvos that you're connected to Hashem. When you're involved not only in mitzvos, when you're involved in Avodas Hashem, when you're involved in Avodas Rishus, which means is that when you're having a conversation with somebody, do you stop and say, is this appropriate to say? Do you see the hand of God in life situation? Do you, as somebody recently told me, that they work for a law company, a law firm, and when they are very successful, they, you know, they walk around the office saying, wow, we cut a great deal. And somebody pointed out to them, but isn't it Hashem that cut this deal for you? And they turn from people saying, what do you mean, God? I'm the one who's brilliant. I'm the one who cut this deal. Leave God in the synagogue. It's me who did this. That's the Yetzirah of splitting. That yes, there's a Yismachu Hashemayim. I believe in God. I daven three times a day. I eat only kosher. I keep Shabbos. But the Sagala Aretz, you don't feel the rejoicing of God down here. You don't feel Hashem's presence. But I am going to ensure that we stay as a Russia, really disconnecting anything to God in heaven. And the third is Ben Adam La'atzmo. There's an idea on the B'nai Yisachar in Source 29 and 30 that there are two aspects to doing a mitzvah. There's the machshava, there's the thinking of the mitzvah. That's the yudkei. That's the ability of the shamayim, the more esoteric aspect. And then the vavhei, the down here in earth, that's the involvement in the maise, the doing of the mitzvah. And that's why Hasidim, before they say, do a mitzvah, they say, l'shem yichud kutcha brichu. It's the bringing together, the oneness of Hashem's name, the yudkei vavkei together, that the machshava, the thought, and the maise, and the deeds will become one and the same. What does the paro, the Yetzirah, do? It splits again the yudkei and the vavkei. It splits from the machshava and the maise where they're not connected. Where a person can be involved in doing things and even learning and even davening and doesn't have the machshava, the thought of connecting to God. That's the Yetzirah, that's the Pyro, that's the Ani. The ego is standing in our way that we forget to connect. The Yismachu Hashemayim v'Tagal Haaretz, the Yudkei Vavkei. It's interesting, he notes, it's a final idea here, that the word Mitzrayim itself, which begins with an open mem and ends with a closed mem, in the middle letters, Tzadik Reish Yud, can be turned around to Yetzer. The Yetzer splits the open mem, the machshava, the maisa, the mem that does, with the closed mem of the machshava, of the thought. It splits it. That's what the Yetzer's job is. That's what Mitzrayim is, that we live our lives. And my friends, we feel this so intently. When we live our lives as religious people, and we live our lives not feeling this religious connection. That's the paro. That's the Yetzirah. That's the Mitzrayim that we're in. That we don't connect our thought to our actions. We don't act. We don't live a life on fire of what it means to be an Eved Hashem. All of us are in Mitzrayims. All of us have this paro of the Ani, the ego, the I, that is so strong, that's resonating so strong, that's hard to hear anything else. But our challenge when reading through this parsha is to be able to listen. It's to be able to listen in 35, for example, in the Makkah Svardeya of the frogs. And the Medrash Shmos Rabba tells us that the most painful part of the Makkah was the croaking of the frogs. They entered into everywhere. All you heard all day was that croaking. And says the Sefer Vayavinu Bamikra, what is the significance of the croaking of the frog? It's in their name, Svardeya. Safarda. They were so ferret. They were calling out. Their siren was da. No, K-N-O-W, the knowledge of God. Recognize that there is a God from Safra, from morning to night. No, that there's a God in heaven. That's what the Makos are about. It's acknowledging God. It's no wonder, parenthetically, that in Perek Shira, the Sfardeya is the one that says that holy statement, Baruch Shem Kvod Machus Olam Ve'ed. The Sfardeya, no. They have that awareness. They understand Hashem's hand in this world. And that's our job. 36 in the Sefer Shalom, he says that the Chol HaKriya Shiva Olam, everything that occurs to a Jew, Kol HaMa'oros HaOvrim Al Ish Yudi, they are all a Kriya Meitz Hashem Yitzbarach to come closer to him. Whether they're times of Simcha or times of struggle, they're all calling us to become closer to Hashem. And explains the Nesiva Shalom, that's why there's such an emphasis in the Chumash on Vishamata Bikolo, to listen to Hashem's voice. He says, what is Bikolo Tishma'u? Isn't it just to listen to mitzvot? No, it's not only. Shemavako mitzvot Torah Yakshiv in the bracket in 36. Listen to Hashem's voice calling us at all times. Because recognize that everything that happens to us on the general and specific is a kriya meitz Hashem Yitzbarach. It's a call for God in order for us to be able to come closer to Him. And that, my friends, is the way to read the parshios in our Chumash. To read them as we being the paro, of we being the Jews. And we recognizing that we don't allow ourselves to be let free. Our job, 37, is to become Levi, to become a Moshe Rabbeinu. Levi, we know, was the only tribe that never sinned by worshipping Avodah Zarah. They are the paradigm of our neshama, which explains the deeper understanding of Chazal that say in 37, back to Chikrei Lev, that any time a person comes to sin, that Ruach Shtosa enters into the person. Levi leaves, because Levi doesn't sin. Levi doesn't do Avodah Zarah. The Neshama, that aspect, walks out in us. Ever wonder why we're so tired? We have all this transition going on, right? Our Neshama leaves, and the Ruach Shtosa comes in, and the Ruach Shtosa leaves, and the Neshama comes back. We're going back and forth. Obviously, it's a very exhausting life that we lead. The question, my friends, that we have to ask ourselves is, how do we get, like the story Mitzrayim, how do we get redeemed? How do we allow the voice of Shevet Levi, the Moshe Rabbeinu, to be able to make an impact on us that will be able to be successful? Now, I must note here, before we answer this question, that the only real time that we really were able to finally get rid of the Egyptians is what we began with in 42, was at Kriyas Yamsuf, was at the splitting of the sea. Where only then it was said, just as you've seen the Egyptians now, you'll never see them again. But our rabbis tell us that Paro was not killed in Kriyas Yamsuf, because Paro has to stay alive, because Paro is found within you and me. But you know what's so fascinating, the Chikrei Lev points out? At this moment when the Egyptians drown, when we finally are able on some level to vanquish evil, we say that famous line, Hashem yimloch l'olam v'ed. Hashem will rule forever. This is the first time that the Malchus, the kingship of Hashem, is mentioned, because the rulership of Paro has been disabled. But as the Chikrei Lev notes, they don't say Hashem melech presently. They say Hashem yimloch, Hashem will rule. Because even at that moment, there's a sense that we can't hold on to this forever. This state of no Paro is a future state. And in a certain sense, as depressing as this may sound, I find it very comforting. Because we recognize that the story of the exodus of Egypt is a story that is a spiral that's happening perpetually. There are times that we get out, there are times we get back in, and it's our whole lives is going to be to struggle with this. And recognize that it is a struggle, and recognize it is not easy. And it's only going to be ultimately in the future when God, Vasiroti Aleifa Evan Mifsarcha, as the Pasuk Yecheskel says, that God's going to take away this evil inclination, this Leif HaEven, only then can we eventually vanquish Paro. Having said this, I'd like to spend the last couple of minutes that we have together today to try to have some sense. I don't want to leave us on a downer to say, okay, I understand, I read these parashios, this is us. Makos happen, life situations happen, hapam, this time I see God. Yes, I see him, but Vani, and I put the ego into it. Oh, it's by accident, it really didn't happen, I don't feel God. We create all these distances, all these illusions. We're not holding on to the staff or holding on to the snake. We're living life of illusions. We think that falsehood is truth and truth is falsehood, and we've messed ourselves up. We're living in Egypt, as Paro said. Our life is about distorting facts. That's the world we live in. The world that we run after this something called green money, and we forget what's really important in terms of our children, in terms of our family. Look at the division that we make in terms of time that we spend with our children. It's a horror to think when I look at my 18-year-olds in seminary and I ask over and over again, how many of you can say that you had your parents available to you? In a real way, the answer is so minimal. We are the Yetzirah. We create this divisiveness. So if this is a really down picture, how can we focus on getting out of Mitzrayim in our own lives? And obviously there are many, many answers to this question. I'd like to suggest one as our selection for today. And that is the Chochma Loki. The brilliance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if we can even comment such a thing, in the way he sets up Jewish redemption, Source 47. He never tells, and Moshe Rabbeinu never says, we're going forever. What does he say? Derech shloshes yomim neilach b'midbar, v'zavachnu l'Hashem Elokeinu kasher yomar eleinu. We shall travel 3 days' journey into the wilderness and slaughter to Hashem our God in the manner he shall tell us. Why? Is it only about this 3-day journey to sacrifice to God? Some levels, because the Jewish people were not ready to hear about a full emancipation. They're too enslaved. They can't think on a major level. They can think about a short respite. They can think about a taste of Avodas Hashem. And from there, to use that as a starting point for complete freedom. The Chag LaHashem served at the end of 47, at least in part, as a stepping stone to complete chayrus, to complete freedom. This Chag LaHashem, this holiday to God, is very powerful model. Because it's about, if you want to look at complete emancipation and in our life, getting rid of the Yetzirah completely, it's too daunting. But a 3-day respite, a Chag LaHashem, a holiday to God, that I can handle. That's within my grasp. It's also true in 48, says Rav Belsky and in Israel, that a Chag LaHashem has intrinsic value in Kedusha, which is no less significant than its capacity to attune and enslave people to freedom. When Shabbos or Yontif comes around, it's a chance to immerse ourselves in total holiness and bask in the closeness we are privileged to have with our Father in heaven. And there are many parallels that can be made between the preparations that the Jewish people made prior to their journey to Hashem's festival and the preparations the Jewish family makes for Shabbos and Yontif. On Erev Shabbos, we take in our beautiful silverware, adorn the Shabbos table, we dress in our finest clothes, the women wear their valuable jewelry, just like it was said in our parsha, right? Each woman shall ask from her fellow silver vessels, gold vessels, and the clothes, etc. And it's also a family time. When Shabbos is approached properly, every mouthful of food in 49 is like a sacrifice on the altar. And when we stand and daven in shul, it's as if we are davening in the Beis Hamikdash. Would those who sit in shul and discuss the sports news or financial markets only realize the opportunity that they ruin with their small talk and idle gossip? We are fortunate and truly blessed to have been given the opportunity to serve Hashem in this way every single week. V'shamru b'nei Yisrael to Shabbos. V'aviv shamarat hadavar. It's with great anticipation. In that way, Klal Yisrael are told to anticipate Shabbos Kodesh. So, for example, he says, when you put away the lechter motzei Shabbos, you wipe them and you say, l'chvot Shabbos Kodesh. In that way, you increase your awareness for the next Shabbos. And perhaps we can say that's the 3 days, and let us go 3 days. The 3 days we know, we start saying in the Shir Shoyom L'chuna Radana on Wednesday. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday are 3 days that should be built as anticipation for Shabbos. That every week we have built into our week a 3-day preparation in order to have our mini emancipation, our time where the family, the parents, and the children connect, our time when we're able to feel our Asiyas HaMitzvot, our time when we feel Hashem's presence in our lives, our time when we share Ashkacha Prati stories that happen over the week, our time when we have the time and patience to think about our Asiyas HaMitzvot and invest in them. But it can't just show up Shabbos. A friend of mine is working on a project making people more aware to have everything done by Chatzot, Erev Shabbos, by midday. And one of the things she was saying that she had heard, that people who are very careful about this, is that they make dinner at the beginning of the week and just like freeze dinner so that every night they're cooking for Shabbos. Now that may work for some people, may work for, not work for others. Others may cook all week and freeze for Shabbos, however it works. But your mindset is Shabbos. I remember when I read this piece and I went shopping on Wednesday, I remember taking down a bottle of drink for Shabbos and saying, wow, this is Lichvot Shabbos Kodesh. You can do it on Wednesday, standing in Shefashuk in the market. Your mindset is that you're buying something for Shabbos. Whatever it is, your focus is on Shabbos, is anticipation. There's that preparation. There's that excitement. Shabbos is coming. We're building toward Shabbos. And that's why, in a real sense, we know the second Dibros, and this is source number 46, is that Shabbos is one of the reasons we have Shabbos. It's the creation of the world. And one of the reasons is Zacharta ki Eved Ha'isa. Remember, you were a servant. Shabbos is a time to remember being a servant in Egypt, because Shabbos is our day of being able to take away the paro, being able to have some emancipation, and to be able to use it as a building block. The way our Shabbos is the way the week is going to be. To be able to use it as a building block of what does it mean to taste a little bit of freedom? What does it mean to have a deeper sense of spiritual connection? We have this opportunity in 50 to let the Kedusha of Shabbos permeate our beings, so we can come to realize that nothing in life has any meaning or value without being totally dedicated to serving Hashem. Every moment of Shabbos is an opportunity to dedicate ourselves completely to the honor of Bona Shalom, to absorb unimaginable levels of holiness, to draw ourselves ever closer to Hashem. And if a person senses that Shabbos is lacking, he should take time after Shabbos to work on it. It's imperative to learn to experience every Chag LaHashem to its fullest, since we ourselves are unaware of the spiritual heights we're capable of attaining. This is what the Pasuk means. We do not know what we shall serve Hashem. We have no idea how close we can draw to Hashem until we put every ounce of our energy into anticipating, preparing, and keeping the holy Shabbos and festivals that He in His infinite goodness has granted us. An eternal inheritance, and this beyond all other things, is a central unifying experience of our existence as His chosen people. And my friends, I really believe that this is, on a very practical note, what we need to think about as well when we're talking about looking at our parsha and recognizing that the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim is the story of our personal struggle in life. We know Chazal tell us that one of the first things that Moshe Rabbeinu established when he began this process of redemption was the idea of a Shabbos, that the Jews have one day off. This idea of Shabbos, this idea of the 3 days in the desert to serve God, this idea of consecrating time and space for the service of God is something that we need to make a reality in our lives. And again, depending where we are in life, it could be for somebody unencumbered with little children and family to have a safer dedicated on Shabbos that they are going to learn. Even someone with a family can have that. Right, whether it's Shabbos Kodesh in English, or Rav Pinkus, or whatever, safer, Parsha safer that one likes, to be able to read on Shabbos, to spend some time being able to understand the beauty of this world. It's a time to turn the nachash back into a mate, back into a staff. If one has children, so then take a concerted effort. What can we do to make the children experience Shabbos? Whether it's Kabbalat Shabbat with our children, whether it's Shabbos activities in the afternoon, whether it's saying Tehillim with the children, whether it's learning with them, whether it's with treats, whatever it is, allow it not just to be a day where the kids just go outside and you go to sleep and whatever happens, happens. No, it should be at some point everything in balance, but the children should feel Shabbos, should feel that this is a different day, that our sudas are different sudas, our meals are different, our whole approach, not only the cooking aspect, the spiritual aspect as well, has to be different. And I really believe, and this is my bracha, my friends, Paro is very hard to beat. He is a strong character, as weak as he is. He has such a strong hold on us. Yes, it would be great if Hashem said, boom, you're out of here. But that's not the reality of life. The reality of life are the makos. The reality of life is struggle. The reality of life is the etzba. It's the finger of God that we should learn over and over again, the yesodos amuna, the sfardeya, the da, the knowledge of God. My bracha to all of us is that at least when we learn these parashios, be aware that it's introspective parashios, to look at ourselves as always being in these narrow straits, being caught and not feeling Hashem's presence on whatever level where we're at, of not seeing everything in terms of the larger picture, bringing nachas ruach to Hashem. And that we should be zocha, that at least we should have respite on Shabbos from our Yetzer Hara, to feel God's presence, to be able to see the beauty of the matter, the beauty of the origin of our world. So at least on Shabbos we'll be able to have every week the exodus from Egypt. And in the schus of the Shabbos and the Kedusha of Shabbos and the preparation of Shabbos, we'll then be able, slowly but surely, that even during the week we'll have moments of freedom, moments of emancipation. And when we say Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim, it will mean a tremendous amount to each and every one of us personally, because we will have experienced on first hand what does it mean to be caught, what does it mean to be stuck, and what does it mean to be freed.